Well, first of all, it's mainly a moment of reflection rather than celebration, because on the one hand, yes, we have achieved a lot in times of crisis for Palestine refugees since 1950. But of course, we're also in a way a reminder of the lack of political solution to this very protracted human crisis. UNRWA obviously went through tremendous challenges in its history. Think of the Lebanese Civil War, we can think of the Intifadas, we can think of the Gaza conflicts, and now the protracted Syrian conflict. And I think the energy and resolve that comes from the team and the courage that is often shown by our staff is directly related to the fact that we are engaged for a community that today is made up of 5 million Palestine refugees, the population of Norway or Singapore, and that really needs not only the delivery of services, but an agency that stands up for their rights.
And a great number of those refugees or of the Palestinians that you help are in the Gaza Strip. Can you give us an update of the situation there, given the state of reconstruction since the conflict last summer and also of the impact of the blockade that is still in place?
Yes, the situation remains truly critical in the Gaza Strip. The blockade has directly led to a huge increase of people dependent on food aid. We had 80,000 people before the blockade was imposed. We now have over 860,000 people. These are highly educated people. Many of them are businessmen and people who had their own businesses and were self-sufficient and today dependent on UNRWA food assistance. That's certainly not a future I would hope for myself and my own family, and therefore I don't wish it for anybody else. And so that is one aspect. Then you have 120,000 people who still are homeless from last year's conflict because none of the fully destroyed homes have been rebuilt. And you have 65% of the population that is under 25 years old. These, again, young, educated people who look for either freedom of movement or a job and are not getting it. I think that is a time bomb for the entire region, and it's something that has to be addressed politically.
Another area of great concern is the situation in the Yarmouk camp, which is a neighborhood in Damascus, Syria, which has recently, part of it, have recently fallen under the control of the Islamic State. What is the current situation? Has UNRWA been able to go in the camp to deliver aid?
There has been no direct access to Yarmouk since the 28th of March. I was still personally in Yarmouk at one of our distribution sites mid-March, saw the access we had and saw also certainly the impact that conflict has had on the population there. Since then, we haven't. Now, that means we have very grave concern for civilians that remain inside Yarmouk. There's still several thousands. And those who managed to flee to the neighborhoods immediately to the east of Yarmouk are being assisted on a regular basis by UNRWA staff and teams. This is, in the midst of so much tragedy, one element that is positive is that our teams are regularly able to provide family parcels, food parcels, hygiene material, and medical assistance. But again, of course, this doesn't address the fundamental concerns of those who remain inside Yarmouk.
So has any aid agency been able to go inside the camp, to your knowledge?
No, there hasn't been any access since the 28th of March. And of course, UNRWA being the main actor in that camp for decades, I think we would know about it. So if any aid has entered, it has been very minimal.
Another main actor in the area is the State of Israel. What are the relationships like between UNRWA and Israel? And has there been a marked evolution since the Gaza conflict last summer?
Well, the channels of communication are very open. We have regular discussions. And so this is a very important parameter that was very clear last summer during the conflict in Gaza, where it was necessary both on the security of our installations and, of course, on the incidents that took place in which our schools were hit, to be able to raise these issues very regularly, directly. Now, of course, because of the issues we deal with, there are often occasions on which we disagree in the discussions that we have.
You recently stated that UNRWA is facing chronic financial challenges. What is the reason for this?
In a way, I think, understanding, having now also spent time reading a lot about it, it goes back quite far in UNRWA's history, and probably in part related to the fact that it was never intended that UNRWA would be an agency that would be there for a long period of time, and therefore it was also thought that its budget didn't need to be structured in ways that would be, in a sense, sustainable, because the whole idea was not that the agency should be sustainable. Now, it's been 65 years in the meantime, and of course the fact that we constantly face this very challenging situation in financial terms, in particular with a gap in terms of our key areas of education and health work, means that currently we have $100 million funding shortfall for this year, which means we can pay the salaries of our teachers, doctors, and nurses only until the end of September. You have to remember, we serve a community the size of the population of Norway or Singapore, and therefore this funding and this money is urgently needed.